From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Yesterday, we discussed the technical picture with him. Today, we'll put all of that in context with the fundamentals, or what might be the fundamentals driving those technical moves in the marketplace, especially for soybeans. We'll also discuss the same issue with Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And along the way today, we'll drop in on the Water Quality Conference that took place up campus at the Illini Union yesterday and throughout the day today here in Urbana-Champaign on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon, the 27th day of October. Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas, joins us. Thanks for being with us, Dan.
You're welcome, Todd.
Yesterday, we went through some of the technicals. Can you review maybe some of the numbers that you went through very quickly for me, and then we can take a look at the fundamentals and see how we might drive towards those numbers?
Well, I think start off here with January soybean contract. Today, we did break above the August high point. So technically, what you've got to say is that we've been in a sideways trading range basically since August. So it's been August, September, October, almost 12-week type trading range. We've been marching sideways, bottom side on January contracts, been this 940 area. The top side on the August high was like 1020. Today we were able to clear 1020 after yesterday we poked right to it. Today we bounced above it, and now we closed at 1025. So a lot of technicians will call this as a breakout of a long-term sideways basing market, and it kind of lays the groundwork for a move on up. We did hit the 38% retracement level today at 1032, the 50% return back to this year's season high would be like 1061, and if we'd go 62%, we could go back to around the 1090 area. A lot of times when we break out of a formation like this, the market might run for a couple of days, and then we would have a fallback to the point of breakout. And if the breakout is valid, then the market would find support and then resume in the direction of the breakout. So that is what technicians will be watching here probably tomorrow and on into early next week. Now, a lot of times when you get toward the end of the month, and that's kind of where we're headed, the market will kind of, since October here has been an up month, we could see some consolidation and some long liquidation activity just prior to November deliveries on the soybean contract. But technically, the soybean market's trying to break out of a sideways trading range on your January, your March, and your May contracts. Your lead futures contract probably needs a little more push to kind of, it's kind of broken above the September high point. And so it's kind of breaking out of a rounded bottom sideways type action too. But as I mentioned yesterday, the short-term indicators are in the overbought category for soybeans, but your intermediate indicators are in more of a bullish situation. So it's going to be kind of a tricky situation here over the next few days. But it does look like the soybean market, at least when you look at technical systems, you look at moving averages, seasonalities, that the soybean market is in good position technically to kind of move on higher. Soybeans have a strong tendency when they do post their seasonal low They never look back. They just keep marching higher as you go on into the new year. Basically, what's driving it is demand. Demand has been very, very active. The end users, so to speak, I think were waiting for lower prices during harvest because of the record crop. They were expecting to scoop up a lot of this cash inventory, both corn and soybeans, at much cheaper levels. They kind of got away from them. So now they're going to have to chase this market higher to kind of meet their needs that they've sold forward in the export market. That goes for both corn and soybeans. I've kind of seen this coming for some time because everybody was waiting around for the big crop to push prices lower. And here we are, at least in the eastern Corn Belt. We're kind of wrapping things up in the eastern Corn Belt. The western Corn Belt still has a way to go. We still have a lot of supplies around, so basis levels at the local elevators are still somewhat sloppy until everything finds a home. But once everything finds a home, I think you'll see those basis levels firm up, and then this export demand that's on the books is going to come in here and provide some underlying support to this market as we move forward on into the winter months.
Just one quick thing. On the demand side, I made note that Carl Zuloff from Ohio State, ag economist there, wrote an article posted to the FarmDoc website that Chinese demand has been slowing, at least its rate of increase. It's still increasing, but that other countries were increasing their rate of demand for soybeans now as well. I take it that's probably one of the driving factors. Have you been able to quantify something along those lines?
Well, there's a lot of demand in the whole Asian Pacific Rim area. That's just a real strong demand focus area. And that's just about all of your major grain trading houses have got offices now in Singapore. That seems to be kind of the trading capital of the world, especially in the export market. So that's the main focus is all that Asian demand coming forward. You know, that looks like that's going to stick around at least for the time being. I don't know where we're going to go long term. It's still going to be about supply and what kind of size of crop South America produces. But at least short term, yes, you're getting a lot of demand from all your Asian countries.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan, for 2 days' worth of technical and fundamental analysis. I really do appreciate it.
Okay, giddy up.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He is from Waco, Texas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon here on campus at the Illini Union. The Illinois Water Conference has been taking place yesterday and today. Its organizer is Laura Christensen. She's with the Department of Crop Sciences. Thanks for being with us. Tell me why you put this conference together.
Well, I was asked to moderate the nutrient sessions because the issues of reducing nutrient loss in the state of Illinois have reached really an unprecedented level. We have our new Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy, which came out about a year ago. And so there's a lot of interest in how can we keep nutrients in our fields rather than moving downstream.
This is being done in cooperation largely with the Illinois Fertilizer Chemical Association, all their dealerships. Jason Solberg is here. He's with IFCA. Tell me something about the way you're working with dealerships to make sure that producers do the four R's correctly, and what are they?
Yeah, of course. We've had tremendous cooperation with our member retailers. Like I said in my presentation today, we get a lot of data from the water companies throughout the state, and we share that with our member retailers, and they share that with their customers. We have our Keep It For Our Crop program, which they almost all of our members have signed a pledge to work with their customers. And the 4Rs, it's just an initiative by the fertilizer industry on trying to find the right source, right rate, right time, and right place with nutrients and how we use them and keep them in the fields and out of the water.
Farmers will be anxious right now as they've begun to finish up their harvest season to put anhydrous ammonia on. What are the things that they should be considering?
Yeah, they should definitely be considering not only just the environment, but also just saving their money. I mean, if they're going to put out anhydrous ammonia early, especially if they don't use a nitrification inhibitor, they can essentially just know that they're going to be losing money. Not all that nitrogen is going to be there the following year for the crop. You're putting it out several months ahead of when the crop's going to need it. So from a financial aspect and from an environmental aspect, keeping it out of the water and trying to be a good steward of the land, these are things that they should consider.
Laura, two of the R's, right time, are important at this time of year.
That's right. Especially for right time, we encourage farmers to think about applying nitrogen in the spring or within the growing season rather than in the fall. But of course, there's lots of good reasons why we like to apply nitrogen in the fall. And so if that's really the best option for you, we always recommend a nitrification inhibitor.
Both of them are too nice. I will say this to you directly. Not until November, not until soil temperatures drop below 50 degrees. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of other things. Ruth Book is here. She's with the NRCS, and we want to talk about some of the control methods that might be used. There is an interesting new one that you discussed. What's this all about?
So new to our suite of conservation practices just this year is something called the saturated buffer. The saturated buffer is something you might actually have heard about before. It's been in a research situation for some years now, and we've learned enough about it to basically mainstream it for our clients, farmers who are interested in doing good conservation on their ground. The saturated buffer essentially takes water coming from a tile system and diverts it into, let's say, leach pipes, essentially pipes that are laid along the length of a stream or ditch, and allows that tile water to go through the soil and become denitrified so it doesn't instantly take nitrates out to the receiving water. Still does a good job of draining your field, but also does a good job of keeping nutrients out of surface water.
So essentially, this looks very much like what producers would be used to seeing at the end of their field, maybe with a weir in a box, but just that would empty eventually into a stream or wherever it happens to empty out into. However, just prior to that, there would be a leach field or laterals that come off the tile line. The weir keeps the water back in an area that would be saturated, so probably someplace you might not be able to farm over. You would have more experience with this than I might.
You have a good sense of what might go on. Some of our land is quite flat in East Central Illinois, and if you put a control structure in place to allow the farmer to determine when and when not to drain, that also gives the potential for the farmer to hold water back in the field. And that can be a benefit, but then that farmer does need to make sure to manipulate that structure in such a way that it doesn't drown out the crop, especially in flat country. If you may have heard of drainage water management, that is something that we've been doing for some time, also a great practice, and can be done in conjunction with the new saturated buffer, especially in flat ground. Put two practices together, often you can get even better benefits.
Are there equip dollars available to put these kinds of structures in place?
The Environmental Quality Incentives Program is one of several that's offered by the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and you've called it EQIP. That's right. And I encourage anyone to stop by in any of our offices. We have an office in just about every county of the state, and find out what the opportunities are for their farm. We have professionals who are able to visit the farm and make recommendations for conservation practices that would include saturated buffers, drainage water management, and a whole host of other things.
Again, we're talking with a panel of folks here that spoke on campus this morning about water quality at the Water Quality Conference. Debbie Flegel is one of those. She's with Trees Forever. Producers really do like to take care of the land. They may not know exactly what Trees Forever is. They've heard more likely than not of the rest of the folks that I've talked to already. What does your organization do?
Trees Forever is a nonprofit organization based in Illinois and Iowa, and we help landowners, farmers, and communities plant trees and help take care of natural areas. So, but we provide grant opportunities for the public in order to plant trees, shrubs, grasses, and wildflowers to reduce erosion, improve water quality, provide wildlife and pollinator habitat. We provide a small financial incentive that can work in cooperation with any of the federal USDA programs, or if they're not eligible for any of those programs, they may still fit into our Illinois Buffer Partnership Program. You can find out more information on our website, which is www.treesforever.org, or you can contact me directly at 309-613-0095, and I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Are you a first or a second place that farmers would go when they're thinking about, hey, I lean to think about trees, and I think about wind as opposed to water in this case, but are you a first or second place where they might go to find out about trees, how they can be used on the properties to control erosion, whether that be by wind or water or nutrient loss or whatever it is? And do you work in cooperation with other agencies that might be in the U.S. government?
Yes, we partner with other organizations such as NRCS, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, Department of Natural Resources. We partner with them on projects as well as work with them to try to give the landowner or farmer the most bang for their buck. As Ruth mentioned, putting more than one conservation practice on your land is going to provide more benefits than just doing one single practice. So if we can all work together to incorporate a full conservation plan for your farm, the farmer is going to receive the most benefits.
And finally, Ruth, how is it that USDA NRCS might work with an organization like Trees Forever?
The USDA NRCS hosts a state technical committee in which we bring together partners from all over the state, and we talk several times a year about how we can work well together. And we actually have a meeting coming up fairly soon. But in between those meetings, we work together with our partners all the time to find out where the synergies are. There are entities who are interested in doing conservation and have a different focus, but we've found that there's a lot of times where we have similar aims and we can work together and get more conservation on the ground.
Again, we've been talking with Ruth Book. She's with Natural Resources Conservation Service, Debbie Flegel of Trees Forever, Laura Christensen with the University of Illinois, and, of course, Jason Solberg of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. You can look them all up online anytime you'd like. Just search out their names. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Matt Bennett now joins us from Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the corn market as it's been influenced by soybeans.
Yeah, I think there's been several days that you could point towards the corn market as being influenced by soybeans, particularly yesterday. You know, the soybean market had quite a march higher, and it felt like it was pulling corn along to an extent. And then you come in here today and you see essentially similar gains across the board for both corn and beans. I don't know that anybody was influencing anyone else, but I think it's certainly been nice to see, yes, we're more than halfway done with harvest, but this is going to be an all-time record crop size. So to see during this October month, you're basically increasing your price, I don't know, 15, almost 20 cents from where we were at the start of the month, which probably isn't really good for people who had yield losses. But, for everyone else, they're pretty happy to see this in the midst of such a huge harvest.
Can we maintain the gains?
Oh, I think we can probably assume that gains will stay intact for the most part, unless this soybean market would come under fire. And then I think that if it does, and part of what has been keeping the corn market alive is probably going to disintegrate somewhat. So I think that as long as world vegetable prices stay as hot as what they've been and demand stays as strong as what it's been, then soybeans might have a fair amount of support under them. But I don't look for that necessarily to be the case all the way through. And I've cautioned people all along to be careful. Bottom line is later on in the year, South Americans could have a fair amount of you know, product to dump onto the world market. We may not have exports like we've had all the way through last year. We may not get that this year. And if we don't, it could definitely hurt our demand.
Yes, crude oil has rallied, but it's setting back, and it appears that OPEC's not maybe going to be able to sustain its trust with each other to keep the valve shut down just a bit. Will this cause a problem, do you think, over the winter months?
You know, I'd been saying all along that if we had crude oil trading up to close to 50 and up and over 50, it certainly bodes well for corn and soybean markets with all-time record crop sizes. But, you know, as you suggest, you know, the OPEC countries trying to get together, and then Iraq comes in and says, well, we don't feel like we should have to be subjected to this production slowdown. You know, that definitely makes everyone look at this thing a little bit differently, and nobody knows whether we'll be able to get everyone to go along with this. And I think that that's definitely a problem. But by all means, I think we need to see some sort of a production slowdown because there's no question that supplies, readily available supplies, are more than robust at this time.
Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd.